Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 253 for comics originally released on June 13th, 2012. Now, starting us off in DC is Batman and Robin number 10. Now, this is one I was curious about because it's got a meeting of all of the Robins. And I really like the, all-new Batman Brave and the Bold issue they did with a similar theme.
And that was the thing. It was like, this was advertised, you know, War of the Robins, and we're going to have all the Robins. I didn't get that out of this issue. There's a little bit of it.
Well, it's funny because we get all of them. We get Jason, we get Todd, we get Jason Todd, we get Dick Grayson, Tim Drake, we get Damian Wayne. So we get all four of those, rarely all at the same time. I think we got one scene that might have had them.
Unless I had read the solicit and the cover blurb that said War of the Robins, if somebody handed this issue to me and asked me to describe it, that's not how I would describe it.
I would agree with that. I would very much agree with that. Although I will say one of the ways I would have described it as not some of Patrick Gleason's best art.
Yeah, I also will describe this issue as the issue that got me to decide to drop Batman and Robin.
Wow.
I haven't been liking it that much ever since they turned Damian into a cold-blooded killer a couple of issues ago.
Well, he's been that way since the beginning, though.
I know, but he hadn't actually pulled the trigger on it.
A couple of times.
Well,
I mean, when he was introduced, he was very much a child that was raised by the League of Assassins. Now, they've downplayed that a little at times, particularly when he was teamed up with Dick Grayson. But I don't think that's like a new aspect of the character. But you're right, they have brought that very much to the forefront lately.
I don't need lately. To read that. You know,
I can't argue with that.
So that's where my review of the issue is going, so I'll let you talk about it some more.
Well, I was disappointed with this issue, to be honest. Like I said, I don't think it was some of Patrick Gleason's best art. There were too many times where some of these Robins just frankly looked too much alike, particularly that page where they're trying to do a family portrait, and they all seem kind of like adults. Some are just shorter than others. With Dick Grayson being taller than Alfred, it didn't seem right. The details on the faces, I thought, were kind of minimalist. I think Patrick Gleason is a better artist than this, and I also think there were better artists they could have chosen for this, or more appropriate artists, I should say, for this, where you've got a bunch of Robins that are going to have the same, you know, gee, they're young white males with dark hair, and make them a bit more distinguished from one another. No mention of Stephanie having been a Robin, so I'm wondering if that's out of continuity now. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, don't know. But this issue, frankly, started off on a sour note with me when they were introducing these various people that have just been brutalized and deformed, still have batarangs sticking out of their head.
Yeah.
That just turned me off big time. And this whole Terminus character, I just don't care for.
Yeah, I am not a, you know, it's like, well, I've ordered up to issue 12, which is the end of this Terminus arc, you know, and that's what I'm stopping ordering, and I'm not going to order the Zero issue.
Mm-hmm.
If for some reason this Terminus arc just blows me away and kind of changes my mind, then okay, yeah, I can get back on the track with it. But
do you think that's going to happen?
I can't say. I mean, maybe they'll surprise me. I don't think it's going to happen, or else I wouldn't have canceled the book, right?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Obviously, I should have guessed that. Fresh off the boat from Alaska, so forgive me if I'm a little slow today. The thing with me, going towards, you know, can they turn it around on the story quality for you, is there was one or two places where I thought this was just a little jumpy, particularly when it transitioned scenes. And I guess, you know, because I flipped back through it to try to figure out what exactly gave me that impression. And it's when they went from Terminus kind of prepping for whatever he was doing and cut to Red Hood and Nightwing fighting. That just seemed like, where did this come from? Why are they fighting? You know, That transition, for some reason, story-wise, didn't work for me. I got very clearly it was a transition, it was a new scene, and I understood what was happening in the scene. It's just, these guys were all back at the manor now, why are they all out? You know, how did they stumble across, you know, Red Hood and Jason, you know, start fighting with Jason and all that? It just, it felt contrived, I guess, is the word I'm thinking. I also don't think that Red Robin's costume was looking the way I was expecting. And, you know, with Damian pulling the whole Spider-Man shtick and then, hey, I'm going to go fight you guys, that War of the Robins aspect does not particularly excite me. So I'm going to stick with the book, but I can definitely see where it would rub somebody like you the wrong way and just, you know, could be a jumping off point.
Yeah, but the Batman books are still the best selling. Well, on the next Mayo report, you know, we can maybe look at the Batman books in general, but I mean, they seem to be some of the better selling books at DC. So even though most of them are not really working for me personally,
yeah,
that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with that, because it's just me, right? It's my taste and the way that I'm enjoying these books, because a lot of people are obviously liking them because they're buying these books. I'll kind of give people the credit. They're going to keep on buying things that they like and not just buy them for the heck of it, you know? So, I mean, a lot of people were raving about the end of Batman number 10. I don't know if you read that one or not. It didn't come out this week, but...
If it came out the previous week.
Yeah, I think it came out the previous week. But, I mean, a lot of people were raving about that. I hated it. You know, it's just like, it's the exact kind of stuff I don't personally like that they do in comics.
Right, right.
You know, that kind of a reveal. But, hey, lots of other people thought it was very cool. So that's good. That's good. You know, if it's something that's going to appeal to the majority of the fans, then that's something that they should do.
Well, even if it doesn't necessarily appeal to the majority of fans, if it gets the majority of them talking,
yeah,
that's good too. Hopefully they're saying something positive about it, but I mean, there's so many comics that just go by unmentioned.
Yeah, I didn't hear anybody else besides me, you know, talking about how it didn't work for them. So let's put it that way. It's like, so I kind of stood alone on that one.
Interesting.
To my knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people really liked that reveal. I don't. So, just me. So the whole Batman family and that whole the whole Night of Owls thing, it just didn't really particularly work for me.
For me, it worked a lot better at the beginning than at the end. After about the second or third week, where they're still fighting the Talons, I'm like, okay, I'm through with this now. Move on. It was longer than it should have been, or it should have had clearer progression in the story where it's like, okay, fight the foot soldiers and now move on to the next level or something. For me, this issue of Batman and Robin, it was a 3 out of 5. It was an average comic. I was hoping it would have been better than that. The story had, I think, a couple of weak points. The art was good, but I was hoping for better. So nothing wrong with this, but, you know, it really didn't knock my socks off, and I think it had the opportunity to do so given, you know, the particular story they were... The particular grouping of characters they had, I should say.
Yeah, and I'll give it a 3 out of 5 also. I mean, I don't think it was a bad issue. I thought it was an average issue. It's just the general direction of this series is not one that... It's not anything particular... Well, other than the fact that I felt kind of... I want to say kind of really disappointed that this didn't deliver on a War of the Robins. You know, that was the main disappointment I had with this issue.
Well, I don't think it was really pitched that way.
Well, right on the cover.
Well, on the solicit.
War of the Robins.
No. I saw it on the cover. I'm just saying that when people were ordering this, it was based on, you know, when Red Robin learns of Damian's betrayal, how will they react and stuff, you know? They could have pitched this better. They could have met the expectations they set better. So I can see that. Move on to our Marvel book.
Spider-Men. Which the last page pretty much saved this issue, huh? Made it be able to live up to that title.
Yeah, it was Spider-Man, and on the last page, his friend.
This is a standard Brian Michael Bendis comic book, in my opinion. It's like, it read pretty fast. I got to the end. I thought it was a good, you know, it was a decent story. It was 20 pages for, you know, I counted the page. I got to the end, and I'm like, wait a minute, is that the end? I paid $3.99 for this because I bought this at the actual comic shop. And there's 20 pages. And, okay, nothing particularly happened in this issue. It's like, well, oh. Then I'm like, oh, yeah, that's pretty much a Brian Michael Bendis issue number one.
It's essentially three scenes. The first is the mainstream Marvel Universe Spider-Man in action. The second, he gets into the warehouse, encounters Mysterio. And then the third, we get him in the Ultimate New York City, and he does the mugging, and we get the actual Ultimate Spider-Man on that last page, which is a single panel. So not only is it 20 pages, the last page is a splash page. There were two that have a two-page spread across the top with inset panels beneath it, making those story-wise effectively single pages, granted fuller than a single actual page. And I had really kind of some mixed feelings on this. I really liked the art. I thought that was, you know, great stuff. I liked how they started with a splash of the mainstream Marvel Universe's New York City, kind of set up that Spider-Man, you know, how Peter Parker's kind of status quo is in generalities, not in anything specific, doesn't like recap his origin or anything, but we get a feel for him and how he's treated, you know, by the general populace and the police and stuff. The middle scene with Mysterio was a very much the, ooh, there's a bright light. Gee, I wonder how he's going to meet the other Spider-Man. I bet it's that. You know, and the don't go in there music as he goes into the thing, and they even comment on some of that. And it was good. Again, the art for me really stood out, you know, in various respects. I thought they did some cool effects, particularly with the fishbowl, how he discovers, oh, wait, it's Mysterio, because I guess he's a little slow today. But it had a couple of twists and turns that I hadn't expected that I thought were fun. And what I really liked is when he gets kind of shifted, Peter Parker, into the Ultimate Universe, if you'll notice the page where he's talking with Mysterio, the dialogue, all in uppercase as is standard. Flip to when he's then a few pages later in the Ultimate New York City and stuff, and encountering, you know, the lady who lives where his apartment could have been, now we get the mixed case dialogue, as is standard in the Ultimate comics. So there was a couple of places where they really paid attention to the details that I really liked. Now, would I have liked to have actually seen the two Spider-Men interact in this issue? Yes. Would I have liked to have at least seen the Ultimate Spider-Man get, I don't know, established, other than he's just some guy in a costume? Yes. So I really think it goes towards the decompressed storytelling that I think is standard with Brian Michael Bendis, as you point out. I totally agree with that. But it was a fun comic. It was certainly a well-drawn comic. I think if I hadn't clicked with the art as well, I would have been a lot more sour on this due to, frankly, the lack of substance. But what we got was good. It was just lightweight. And at $3.99, that's too steep of a price for this.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good comic. It was just absolutely not worth $3.99, in my opinion. I mean, this is something that, you know, it's, to me, definitely a wait-for-the-trade series. Mm-hmm. Since I picked this up at the shop, I'm not going to be buying issues 2, 3, 4, 5 of this. Somewhere down the line, I'll look for them and pick them up. You know, I'd be interested to see how the story goes, but not for another $16.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, it's like, it's just overpriced. And well, and the free digital copy does nothing for me to defray that cost.
Yeah. I guess for me, while it was all fine and good, at the end of this issue, there is zero sense of danger, suspense, some threat for them to go face. Because we've got, you know, the mainstream Peter Parker, who's a scientific genius, getting back home shouldn't be a problem for him.
Yeah,
he just needs somewhere to work.
As of right now, the point of conflict is Peter will figure out he's in a parallel universe and has to figure out how to get home. That is the conflict that has been established at this point.
I'm not even sure I'd qualify that as conflict.
Yeah, I know, but I mean,
it's a task on his to-do list.
Right.
Hang out with this kid, go find a lab, go home,
I'm sure
go beat up Mysterio.
Yeah, there's going to be something more than that, I'm sure, set up, but gee, it might have been nice had that been hinted at in the first issue.
They could easily do another issue or two where he's encountering the remains of this world's Fantastic Four, the Ultimates, seeing how it's different. Gosh, that's neat. Meeting that Nick Fury, commenting how he looks like Samuel L. Jackson. He tries to go home at about issue 3 point. Miles gets sucked in with him. Oh, gee, now they're going to have to go send him back. But first, they've got to go beat up Mysterio and solve whatever he's done in, you know, I don't want to say the real world, but in the mainstream Marvel Universe, and then send Miles back home. But Miles has to be on our world for a few issues, I think, to see, you know, how that works. But it just, and I'm going to be very entertained by that. I'm going to be very happy with that. But it's not like there's some big dire threat that, you know, Galactus is coming down and they've got to go fight him or something silly like that. You know what I mean? It's, we don't know what the plot is.
Yeah. What do you think about the pin-up cover? Where they're without their masks just to, I mean, it's not like that's ever a scene that's going to happen anywhere. They're just doing that to kind of shine a light on, hey, look, you know, we got Spider-Man, you know, and here's this different Spider-Man, you know?
It was okay. I mean, it, I don't know, I didn't really think all that much about it, frankly. They seemed, the way they've got the outline around them, almost like they were very clearly layered on. Like they could have used either one of those as a solo image on their individual titles, and they just said, hey, let's slam them together or something. I was more impressed with, at the end of the issue, where they've got the next issue teaser, the scene, or the image of them pulling off each other's masks, because that really kind of highlighted the height difference, if nothing else, and I thought that was fun. I'm looking forward to the rest of this, but I'm an easy mark on this kind of stuff. It was, again, terrific art. I was very pleased with that. The story held together. It was just, it was light.
You know, and what you just said, that was what I was thinking, is this is a story that was written for people that have a predilection to like this kind of thing.
I would think most stories are that way, but I see your point.
I don't think it's something that, to me, it's not something that's going to suck in a new person. Maybe I'm wrong on that. maybe someone...
It could be
used... just a lot of money, you know, who doesn't mind spending $4 on 20 pages that you can read in 5 minutes and get no actual, you know, feeling of conflict or, you know, feeling like an actual good chunk of story happened.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I again, would be hard-pressed to totally disagree with that, but I do think this is something that could possibly bridge somebody from the mainstream Spider-Man into the Ultimate Spider-Man, should they decide they like that character. Now, granted, at this point, they've not really met that character. But given that Amazing Spider-Man is, I believe, outselling Ultimate Spider-Man by a margin, let me go double-check that real quick, because I happen to have that... the May sales file open. Yeah, Amazing Spider-Man is up at the 58,000 mark, and Ultimate Spider-Man is at the 42,000 mark. So, you know, there's about a 16,000 gap between those two titles, and I could see where, ironically, at this point they're trying to pump up Ultimate Spider-Man using Amazing Spider-Man, whereas at one point it very clearly would have been in the other direction. So, we'll see. I think these kinds of crossover stories are more for the curious and the, again, the half-sold already. If they're already into one half of the crossover, they may try it out to learn about the other. At this point, we've learned nothing about the Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, so in that respect, you could argue this issue has failed to some degree, even though it was somewhat entertaining. But I think this is a tough market and a good but light read. I don't think that's sufficient for the most part.
Yeah, I agree. It was a 3 for me. It was not a bad comic book. I just thought it really lacked in, you know, enough oomph. I mean, especially as a first issue. I don't think it was a very effective first issue.
I would agree with that. For me, I'm giving it a 4. A lot of that on the strength of the art, which really clicked with me. I thought it was well done. I liked the little details, like when they shift the dialogue, when they get to the Ultimate World and stuff. So... this has the potential of making for a really good 5-issue story. As a first issue, you're right, it didn't start off strong.
I don't disagree with you at all. I think that it absolutely had great art, but,
yeah.
You know, it
no, I see where you're coming from, and given how many titles Marvel's coming out with, how many they're double shipping, how much comics are costing. I mean, May was, and again, this came out in June, but May was the top dollar total for the top 300 in the Final Order era. So more money was spent on comics and stuff, which means there's more fighting for that money, if you will. Because arguably it was also the most expensive month for comics in May. So the bang for the buck factor, I think, really weighs in. And it wouldn't surprise me if this does well on a first issue, but we see a strong drop on the second because people are like, well, 20 pages, $4, three scenes, one Spider-Man and a shot of another, you know? It'll be curious to see how the market reacts to this and if they found it as essentially lackluster of a first issue. In other words, not a sufficient selling point to get them onto the rest of that. Mm-hmm. You know, where that fifth issue lands, I think, is going to be very telling.
Right.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Kiss from IDW. This one was a very interesting story to me. I mean, the Chris Ryle, you know, is a huge Kiss fan. You know, when you read the notes at the back, which I read, you know, he's been a huge Kiss fan forever. The art by Jamal Igel was, I thought, was really nice. The story was a decent story, but, you know, as I read through it, I mean, my fandom of Kiss and my familiarity with Kiss personally doesn't extend much beyond Rock and Roll All Night. You know, that's like the song that I know of that they do that I can kind of, you know, hum that in my head and know the words pretty much too. But I don't go much beyond that. I'm not a member of the Kiss Army. I think that the story itself was a decent enough story, and it, to some extent, stands on its own. But at the same time, there appeared to be a lot of extra stuff in here that I was missing, you know, that it didn't bother me that much. I didn't think it particularly detracted from the story. It's just I had a general awareness that there was a layer or two of this story that I was missing because I was not a Kiss fan.
I can totally understand that because I'm not a fan of the band. I'm not sure I could have named any one of their songs. I've been aware of them, obviously. I mean, they're hard to not know about, but I don't know really anything in particular about them. And I was curious about this just kind of in general because they've done other Kiss comics that have, in some cases, I think, been fairly well received. I like Jamal Igel's art, so it's like, fine, I'll give this a shot, and I'm glad I did. Now, there are a couple of places, particularly that first story page, where it's 1929, it's 1929, it's still 1929, by God, we're in 1929. I mean, I think Chris Ryle kind of beat that to death just a little bit, but he established the scene. You know, I was expecting Elliot Ness to come popping out at any point. I think doing this as a period piece was very interesting. And as I was reading this, I was enjoying it. Again, I was loving the art. It got me very interested in this stuff. But I do think, like you were saying, that there might have been a layer of the story that I was missing due to my ignorance about the band and any, you know, kind of its mythos, its songs, or anything of the sort. And I'm assuming the text at the top of those pages is lyrics from one of their songs or something.
I made the same assumption. It's like it seemed like it was lyrics to a song. It seems like, and I think Chris mentions this in the little editorial at the back also, that you know, a lot of the characters in the book are characters from songs. I think even like this main bad guy is someone who is featured in a song somewhere.
That's
but
cool.
I can't say that with a certainty because I'm not that degree of a fan. So, I mean, my general assessment on this was it was a decent comic, right? I think that for people who are fans of Kiss, I think this would be an outstanding comic because, you know, if I can read it as someone that knows nothing about Kiss and say, oh, that was a pretty good comic book, you know, and then you layer on all those additional layers of, you know, content, it would have to blow the mind to someone who's an actual Kiss fan.
This was one of those where I would have possibly appreciated editor's notes, particularly on page 5, where the one guy is getting kind of the, hey, there is all this mythos out there, and getting an idea of like where I could have read up on some of this, because I found it to be a highly accessible issue and a very entertaining issue. It was clear there was another deeper layer to the story that if I was all familiar with all the backstory on the band, I would have gotten. And while I knew I wasn't getting that, I didn't feel like that was preventing me from getting a good, entertaining story. It's just I know there's another layer that if I go hit the Wikipedia page on Kiss or Kiss fansite or something, get some background on that, I could reread this and get more out of it. And frankly, I really appreciated that. This got me curious about that kind of backstory for the band, how it's all getting referenced in here and all of that stuff, because I'm, like you, under the assumption that it is all tying together various characters from songs and things like that. So having somewhere that could kind of start me on that journey would be interesting to me. At this point, you know, I might check out some of the past Kiss issues. I might not. I haven't decided. But I found this to be surprisingly accessible compared to some of the other stuff we've read in the past, where either you're in the know or you're not. So I think Chris Ryle did a very good job there, kind of establishing, you know, what's going on, you know, what the basics of the mythos as far as the story go are. Mm-hmm. So I was very impressed with that. It could have been something where I came in and it's like, I don't know anything about the band, left thinking the same thing and not caring, you know? So
right.
I mean, for me, this was a very strong 4 out of 5. I was very impressed with this, both on the writing and the art. And I think if I had more familiarity with the band, easily could have been a 5 out of 5.
Yeah. I mean, I gave it a 4 also. But that said, I also have decided that I'm not going to continue getting it. Because I just, you know, the additional layers that I'm missing in the story, that's just something that, it was something that kind of bugged me as I was reading it, so.
Interesting, because I mean, it kind of intrigued me.
I've got lots of other things. I mean, I've got so many books I need to read, so.
Yeah, no, I can totally understand that. I'm gonna ride this one through, because again, I'm loving the art. I found the story very entertaining, and it sparked my curiosity about stuff, and if it continues to do that throughout the ride, I may check out some of the past stuff. Again, I may not. I haven't decided, but it's at least on the horizon. It's something I'm thinking about. And to me, for a first issue, it got me into the world. It got me entertained. It got me wanting more, or at least open to more. That's success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. Very cool. So that was this week. I assume you just got back from an Alaska cruise.
Yeah, that was my week.
This, so.
Glacier Bay, a helicopter to walk on a glacier, a duck tour in Ketchikan. Excellent, excellent food. I have not eaten that well in I don't remember how long. It was great stuff.
Right.
So that was my week.
Very cool.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That'll do it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Before Watchmen, Comedian number 1 from DC, Secret Avengers number 28 from Marvel, and Critter volume 2 number 1 from Big Dog Inc.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.